radio@firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Hello, everyone. This is Ed Ballin from firehouse.com. And in this podcast, we have an expert in fireworks safety to talk to us about how we as firefighters should conduct ourselves around display fireworks and how to keep safe. Sean Allison is a longtime career firefighter and a captain with the Merrimack, New Hampshire Fire Rescue Department. He's also a licensed pyrotechnician with the Atlas Pyrovision Productions, headquartered in Jaffrey, New Hampshire. This spring, John was a lead instructor in a series of fireworks courses designed exclusively for firefighters, and he's here with us today to share us a little bit about what he taught and how to keep ourselves safe. Hello, Sean, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Ed. Thank you for having me.
Sean, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you're involved with this firefighter safety and fireworks?
Yeah, I guess to try to give you a quick history of how it came about, Ed, was that I started, like most firefighters, as a fire department standby. We would go to your local event and stand by on the 4th of July, and then, you know, next thing you know, we'd be getting closer and closer, and guys, you know, it seems to be the nature of firefighters to want to get closer to the action. And next thing you know, I'd be involved with the display and started getting involved with actually shooting displays. And then kind of light went off and said, hey, wait a minute, what am I doing? I don't even have any training or anything else like that. And so I said, yeah, I'm going to go out and get certified, do my training. And I have worked for a few different display companies. And then I transferred over to Atlas and have been working for them ever since and became a licensed pyrotechnician. And working with them and started working more and more displays than just the local, you know, fourth that we had here in town. I started working displays throughout through the numerous states that we cover now. And I started noticing that the display standby procedures for every department, they were all over the place. There was every department would do something different, from some departments would be there to none showing up to other ones that would, you know, showing up kicking racks and really not having a full understanding of what they were being involved with. So that's kind of how I got involved with starting this program. I, you know, watching the way procedures were being done, I said, hey, something's got to become more uniform. And it's really more about the firefighter safety and giving them an idea of what they're really being involved with, because everybody seems to take it into their mind that it's just an entertainment venue and, you know, this is the 4th of July, everything good, nothing bad happens. But unfortunately, as the numbers show, we've wound up with numerous accidents and fatalities every year. Not necessarily fatalities every year, though last year I believe we're at 5 for the year. Not firefighters, but pyrotechnicians and people being involved with firing displays that have ended up getting killed, and then numerous injuries, which I don't even have off the top of my head. So that's kind of how the program began in a kind of a short, long history.
Sure. Now, and just to be clear, we're talking about the big displays here, the professional-grade fireworks. We're not talking about the backyard stuff that Joe Q Citizen has. These are the big guns that thunder in the sky and have big bursts and things like that.
Correct. We're dealing with it's actually labeled as 1.3 and 1.1G that we're dealing with for display fireworks, and that's exactly what we're dealing with. Not with the there's a little bit that we do cover over the 1.4, which is considered consumer fireworks,
right?
But that is because we do have some of that involved with displays. We do use 1.3 and 1.4 together, but this is really about the 1.3 safety. The big guys, for lack of better terms.
Right, right. And also, just for clarification, you've been at this a while. You're not you didn't just fall off the turnip truck. You've been around for a while in fire service and also with pyrotechnics, right?
Correct. I've been in the fire service full time for I'm on 23 years now. It's one of the start losing track, and I've been involved with pyrotechnics in a real charge. I've been involved with them for over 10 years, other than, you know, the before of the occasional being involved.
Yeah. So why don't you just run down a little bit about what kinds of things that firefighters really need to watch out for when they either first go to a scene or something's been being ready to be discharged? Just a little bit of the basics. I attended one of your classes this spring, and so I know a little bit about what you say. And there was one comment that you made that no firefighter should die in the name of entertainment. And I'd like you to explain a little bit about that, maybe expound a little bit about your thoughts about that.
Okay. Sure. You know, if I get going on a tangent, just steer me in the direction that's really what the whole point of our course is. And the course is known as the Display Fireworks Emergency Response Training. And what we're trying to do is get the point across, really to give the quick summary of it, is we're trying to get firefighters to understand we want you to move back. There's no need for firefighters to be up on top of the displays. And if you actually follow 1123, the NFPA 1123, it tells firefighters that they're not supposed to be in the display site. They're supposed to be back at the same distances as the audience. And our point is that we're trying to make that point, but we also are trying to prove that point, and that's why we go through the class with showing the display accidents that we do and then recreating them to prove our point. But that's what I was saying earlier, is that it gets down to guys think of this as the fourth, and it becomes a nonchalant, kind of a carefree environment that people tend to run into. And what they forget is this truly is entertainment with explosives. And the biggest point of starting this class and the reason for it was that there's no need for any firefighter to ever get hurt or injured involved in the entertainment venue. You know, you're looking at your gain versus loss. There's just it. No matter how you do it, it doesn't add up. So it's really about the way that fire departments should be operating and acting. Now, we cover inspections of displays and stuff like that, and that's all about public safety, which is a big thing that we're pushing. But my portion of the class and what we're really pushing is firefighter safety, and that's from showing up to your radio procedures. We found, you've sat through the class, you find when you ask guys, you know, what's your procedure? Do you have an SOG for operating at a display fireworks operation? And I can tell you 98% of the time guys have nothing and have no idea what they're going to do. And what was amazing is when you really look at it, is that if you're doing electronic ignition fireworks, guys should be treating this like they would either a bomb scene or a blasting zone. And that's why I make the points of, you wouldn't walk into a blasting zone and walk up and start kicking a charge. Why do guys find it necessary to run over and kick racks or want to handle product that they shouldn't be handling? It's trying to get the point of, you know, hey, I understand it's cool and everybody likes to see what makes fireworks work, but you also have to remember is that you're handling an explosive. So
it's too easy to think about. I mean, I think there isn't a person among us that hasn't handled the consumer-grade fireworks that, you know, if something happens, you go, ow, and you brush off the little spark that landed on your skin or whatever. But we're talking about things that can kill you easily. I think we were talking about explosive charges, the equivalent of like hand grenades and dynamite. And so these are serious things that can really kill people. So you're right, nonchalant is not a good idea. So perhaps you can just tell us about the kind of force that we're dealing with when we're looking at these display fireworks, the different sized shells and the salutes. And so we get a comprehension of what kinds of dangers we're facing when we look at display fireworks.
Well, the thing that everybody forgets is, and when you're dealing with them, when fireworks are loaded in a mortar, and it doesn't matter if it's a reload show or preloaded, if people would think of those as that, it's nothing but a muzzle loader. And for people who hunt and like we do here in the Northeast, everybody knows what a muzzle loader is. That's really what you've come down to. You have a projectile sitting on top of a black powder charge, and that's coming out of there at 232 miles an hour. So by the time it's already coming out of that tube, one of the big things that we're pushing is that there isn't anybody in the crowd. I've yet to meet them that can run that fast. So when things go wrong, that's when your problems come from, because you've got a projectile that can travel anywhere to 1,200 feet. And really, to break it down, it's kind of hard to do explaining it. If you're looking at it visually and you see a chart, you know, you understand that for every inch, you really the quick rule of thumb is to remember for every inch of shell size. So if I've got a 200 inch, I'm sorry, if I have a 2-inch shell, it's going to travel 200 feet. Just remember that's 100 feet of travel per inch of shell is kind of the quick, easy math for people to use. So if you're trying to think of where should I be standing or where should I be placing the truck, you know, that shell is supposed to go 1,200 feet in the air. But if there's an accident, that may be going 1,200 feet along the ground. Now, it may not reach out that far, but that's a consideration. And then what you want to think of also is there's a burst that comes with that shell. So once it reaches its, once it reaches the apex of its height, that's also going to be a burst, and that's going to spread out, could be anywhere to 800 feet. Now, that's in all directions. So that's why we kind of push what we do. You got to think of how far that shell will travel plus the brake effect. Now, some brake effects will be nothing, but I'm trying to look at worst-case scenario of how far that can reach out and actually hurt you.
Correct. And just to make sure we're clear of terms of the art here, mortars and shells, a mortar is what, and a shell is what? The shape and dimensions and how far they go.
Okay. Your mortar is the tube that it's actually loaded into. So if you see, mortars can be made of steel, or they can be made of HDPE, which is the industry standard that we use now. But that's your tubes that the shell is actually loaded into. They're referred to as mortars, or you'll hear there's a bunch of slang terms that different guys in the industry use. They're called guns, and but they all mean the same thing, and that's another thing that guys kind of get to learn is that a mortar, a tube, guns, they're all saying the same thing. But they all mean the same thing, but we're all saying it different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what the shell is loaded into, and then it's once the lift charge is ignited, that's what it fires out of. So,
right, and these shells are generally spherical, correct? In different, most of them are round, like basketballs, or
yeah, correct. Or, if you think of it, think of it as a softball. It's a I think of the easiest for size that you're looking at. Now, shells do come in, they come in different shapes and sizes, but your most common is a round shell or a ball shell, as we call them. Now, they do have cylindrical shells, which if you're trying to think of what the shape is, you know, they're usually flat on the top and flat on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of looks like a Coke can or moving up to a coffee can. They get bigger and longer, but your most common is a ball shell is what we really or cylindrical is the shell that you'll see, and that's why we use that one as an example in the class. You know, you think of a 200 mile an hour softball skipping along the ground. That's exactly what a shell will do.
Right.
So it kind of gives you the visual if you're trying to think of it, what it sounds
exactly
like.
Yeah, and these are held in something you call racks. Maybe you can just explain what a rack is just a little bit, just to make sure people understand that term too.
Okay. Racks is when we put different mortars. They're all the same size. If you have, I'll use a 3-inch mortars, we'll have 10 mortars that are placed together and built into a wooden rack. And the division that they need to be separated from each other is already built in. They're made out of wood construction so that they're held securely on the tops and bottoms so that they can't fall out or just tip over. So each mortar is actually secured to the wood framing, and it's built into a 10 tubes long, and that's what we call a rack. And you'll see that up into the 6-inch tubes. What happens is as the tubes get bigger, the racks, there's less of them, trying to give a visual or, you know, trying to explain what it would look like.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically you just see a wooden rack, one solid piece. Think of a kind of a 2x4 that's on each end and on the bottom, and then the sides are held with some are made with plywood or wood strapping that comes along the side to hold everything together.
Right, and these are things that the shooter will bring with him or her to the site to, and then load up with the shells and put the fuses in or the electronic e-matches or things like that. Correct.
Yes, correct. Yeah, your display companies should be showing up with all their own materials that they've already, you know, gone through, inspected, making sure everything's up to par before the season, and then they come with their racks. They'll build the racks. There's going to be different configurations on how things are laid out. You know, they could be setting them up in 4-square pods. They could be doing offset lines. Finale racks is where all the racks are. There's a separation distance, and it's kind of hard to explain separations. That's why I really don't want to get into it, because if different states have different laws, so they have different separation distances where New Hampshire requires a foot, other ones only require the, you know, half the diameter of the mortar. So, but they're all built and put together. Like, I'm sorry, I'm in the firehouse today, so.
It's okay. We're all firefighters here. Let us know that you're for real. Now, Sean, a typical small-town fireworks display might have how many shells in it? What kind of product are we talking about?
Okay. What you normally see during the 4th of July, we have what we call cakes, which are, you know, preloaded that are already fused together. There's going to be a combination of cakes and shells. And it depends on the venue and the area they're working at, if it's going to be preloaded versus a reload show. But you're going to see, you know, some of the smaller shows, you're going to see, you know, only a couple hundred shells to where you get up into the normal hometown display, which is, you're going to see the, you know, 1,500 to 2,000 shells that are going. And then, you, of course, you get into your big venues, and you're going to get into the thousands and, you know, 10,000 plus shells, depending on the size of the shows. But the typical, you can plan on 1,500 shells usually during the 4th of July celebration.
Yeah. And I guess my point is, we can't be guaranteed that every single one of those shells is going to be made right or going to go off the way it's supposed to and go perfectly. So that's where we have to be careful, right?
Oh, correct. I mean, you're dealing with a, you know, a product that's made, they start making, you know, they're already working on this year's orders. I'm sorry, for next year, they're already working on those orders already. And this stuff is made overseas. I would venture to say that probably 90% of the product we're seeing is coming from overseas. There are U.S. manufacturers, there are companies that are making it here, but they do a lot of specialty shells and your very high-end shells. But your typical 4th of July displays are pretty much imported. So you have a variety of shells that are coming in, different sizes that are coming in. And correct, I mean, it's being made. There are going to be there's going to be malfunctions with shells. There's going to be something that went wrong from, you know, there can be anything from a lift charge that's not good to a time fuse where the shell discharges either early or way late. So you can have a whole bunch of different malfunctions that can occur.
So why don't we run down through some of those kinds of different malfunctions? So if firefighters are on the scene, something happens, then they'll know what kind of thing that they're looking at, and then you'll be able to explain why we need to back up, take cover, shield ourselves, get away.
Okay. We try to, when we're doing the display part, what we try to show everybody is that you're going to have certain things that go that are going to happen that are a normal part of a display. It's not a critical. It's not the display failure. But one of the big things that we always see are low breaks, and that's where the lift charge either wasn't enough put in the lift charge, or there may have been something that would cause the lift charge not to go off completely. But what happens is the shell doesn't reach its height. If it's supposed to go to 300 feet and it only reaches, you know, 100 feet and it goes off, it ends up raining a whole bunch of stars down on everybody. And usually the places where you seem to rain down is always on where your standby crews are. So, you know, depending on the size of the shell, depends on the size of the stars that are in it. And, you know, some of those you can be anywhere from, you know, the small BB size stuff up to things that are stars that are coming out of those are the size of golf balls. And those, you know, they get some good speed behind them, and they're going to continue to burn when they hit. So that's one of those. It's not a catastrophic failure. It's just that the product did not reach the height that it was designed to go off at. So you'll have those. You'll have stuff that can actually go off in the tubes, which creates what we call a flower pot. And that's where a shell detonates in the mortar itself, and it blows everything else up, blows it straight up. You'll see a big fan-shape effect that blows straight up in the air from the ground up. Also, not a catastrophic failure. That's why they're in the mortars that they are, is that they can withstand. There may be some damage to the mortar, but that one's already been fired. Your display operator will usually stop shooting from that rack in that area until they inspect it to make sure everything's okay to continue. But the mortars are designed to handle that, and that's so that's not a major issue, but it can cause injuries and be painful to guys that are standing too close. Then we start working our way up into, you know, a ground detonation where a shell is actually falling back to the ground and goes off at your feet. And depending on the type of shell or the effects that are involved, that can, you know, that can cover a wide area. Or if it's in a salute, which is the big bang that everybody hears, are called salutes or reports. We refer to them as salutes. But if you have a salute that's going off in the racks, then you have what you can have, a rack that's completely blown apart, and that's, you know, a catastrophic failure. Then if things are on a time train and they're already firing, you know, you could have tubes that are laying down or pointing in every kind of direction, and that's going to that's where you wind up with your injuries. But also when tubes are destroyed or laying on the ground discharging, then you're going to wind up with materials that wind up in the audience, is not just your standby crews.
Right. Part of what we're going to do with this package is we're going to have videos online as well. And I would encourage people to go and take a look at some of these things. Sean and his crews have put together a show that illustrates some of these catastrophic and flower pot events that happen. So there'll be some people, you'll be able to look at those online too as well. And it's that very reason, those kinds of things that happen, the tubes lying on the ground or shrapnel flying around, that people need to move away. And that's, like you said, is a reason why people need to move back, correct?
Yes.
People need to move away. The firefighters need to move away.
That's one of the, you know, that's the big thing I've always found. When, you know, at, anybody that's been involved with the fire service or teaches firefighters, you know that they usually show some resistance to things, even though you tell them it's about safety. It's one of those deals where you basically got to go out and show them what you're talking about. And that's why we designed it, and that's why we're providing the videos to put online. They're not there for entertainment purposes. They're to show what can really go wrong and what can really happen and why we're saying what we're saying. You start seeing some catastrophic failures, or you see the low breaks, or the video for the rack blow will be in there. You'll see what a salute looks like, and that's only a 3-inch salute that's going off. So that's not even moving into your bigger size shells. Everything in those videos is done with 3-inch shells, and that's on your small side. So you look at what happens and how much area is covered or how much damage is caused by those. It doesn't take much imagination to see what the larger sizes are going to do for damage.
Right.
And that's why we're pushing the safety, guys. This is what it can do. Please look at this. Please understand that we're not just preaching this because we have nothing better to do with our times. We're actually, there's a method to our madness, and this is why we want you to see this. You know, as we're saying, the part of there's nothing for the fire department that they're going to do if there's a display. If there's a fire with a display or a display failure, they really need to be focusing on being back outside of the area. Take care of the incident after it happens. It's going to be rapid. It's going to happen quickly if there is a failure. The display crew will already have a procedure in place if something goes wrong. But there's nothing the fire department's going to save. It's all risk. There's no gain to putting out a display. There's certain things a display operator can do to stop a display once it's started. But if there's a failure, the failure is going to happen. It's better to be outside of the area when it does happen, and then take care of your incident afterwards for the fire department that you need to be concentrating on. You know, do I have a mass casualty? Did this wind up with product going into the audience? You know, do I have brush fires or anything else like that? But they don't want to rush in. They need to have the area cleared by the company that's working, by your lead technician, because sometimes you'll go in and there'll be product laying out in the field. It could be anywhere, so that the area needs to be cleared by your technician. Fire department should not be operating in there because the guys aren't trained on what to be doing if they find an undetonated shell. You know, it goes back to the original. We don't go walking into a blasting zone and start clearing charges out of a hole. The guys shouldn't be handling explosives at all. You're not trained in it, and it's really it's a dangerous situation to be putting guys in. They shouldn't be partaking in any part of it. The best the fire department should be doing it during a display, if there's an accident or if there's a at the end of the display, if they want to help with doing a line search when we do looking for product that hasn't, they can mark an area, but they shouldn't be handling that product. You shouldn't be picking it up. I mean, we try to show it in the end that a dud's not always a dud, and there's been some severe injuries from guys that have picked up product and had it go off, and sometimes these can go off 15, 20 minutes later. So it's no different than the guy who was running around. You know, we go back to the consumer fireworks, you know, when guys were lighting off ladyfingers or, you know, small firecracker, and, you know, they thought everything was great, and then they go over and pick it up a few minutes later and it goes off. Well, the same holds true for the bigger stuff. So, unfortunately, it causes a lot more damage when it does go off.
Yeah. Well, It goes back to almost firefighting 101, scene safety. Protect yourself. And we don't go walking up to a scene with live wires down and start moving live wires around and trying to do that kind of stuff. It shouldn't be any different with a fireworks display that's malfunctioned and spraying all kinds of product everywhere. So it makes sense to me that you would move back and be in the audience and take care of those casualties, because, like you say, you guys have already got something in place. You know what to do, and the brush fire is probably not going to get any worse in a couple of minutes. And I know one thing that you said during the course, and that was the importance of having signals between mm-hmm. the shooter and the technician and the firefighters. That way, there, if the firefighters need to stop the show, or you need to signal to them that it's okay to come in and retrieve somebody that's maybe injured. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, this what we have is we have our pre-show briefing. And what I, as a lead technician, I have a meeting with my crew. You know, the guys have been working all day and everything. But what we do before we get ready to shoot the show, we try to have the fire department involved. If there's a fire department representative on scene, what we do is try to bring one guy over. We don't try to talk to a group of everybody. But you usually have your officer that'll come over, and we'll run him through the briefing so that he knows what my crew is doing as far as the fireworks are concerned. We work out a series of signals, and it all depends on where we are. You know, during the middle of firing of a display, I have all my safety gear on, and trying to text message me or give me a phone call is not going to work. So we usually try to come up with hand signals, usually a series of flashlight signals that'll work, and that's I can give them. You have to decide what your all clear is going to be or enter the scene. The most important thing is that make sure that you have a signal that's worked out for letting them know that they can enter the scene, and for an all clear. Right. And you're also wanted to have your third one of if you need to signal back to me that we need to stop the display. There's some things that can happen that the fire department being out with the audience can let you know. If you got product that's actually falling into the audience, you know, broken parts from shells where you have ash and stuff, little tiny bits of cardboard and stuff like that are falling back into the audience, that's always nice to know. We have a spotter out there, but it's also good for the fire department to be out, and that's the kind of things that they should be concentrating on.
Right, right. And I think that this may be a little bit not where your expertise are, but perhaps they are. What about the authority, the entity that has authority? You spoke about
authority
that.
The authority having jurisdiction?
Yes, please.
Yes.
Explain that a little bit.
Okay, the authority having jurisdiction, it's looked at from two different ways. It depends on the state that you're dealing with, so I don't want to step on anybody's toes. But mm-hmm. for us, the authority having jurisdiction is going to be the fire chief or his designee. And where we run into situations is that that can be anybody that's assigned by the fire department to be there, and that can be your standby crew. It's going to be your officer in charge is considered to be the authority having jurisdiction. Now, understanding that the authority having jurisdiction, the state fire marshal becomes the ultimate authority, so they can come in and have their say, but they have the ultimate say. But the fire chief or his designee is what we try to concentrate on, and that's that. If you are going to be working at a fireworks standby, or if your department requires you to be there from the time the material comes off the truck till the end of the display, is that you want to make sure the information that you have or you're providing to a fireworks crew is correct, and that you are informed and up to date on the laws. And the reason we talk about that during the class is that if a fireworks crew is going to consider anybody that shows up from the fire department, now you have to remember we see a wide variety. I have everything that, from two engines and an ambulance that are standby crews on some of our shows to we have, a guy that shows up in a pickup and with a fire department T-shirt and a portable, let you know he's the guy in charge, and you guys carry on, do what you're doing. But it doesn't matter who the authority having jurisdiction is. They need to make sure that the information that they're providing is correct, because what will happen is as a technician, sometimes they're going to ask if we can change things up. And not saying that anybody's trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes, but they may have a product that isn't permitted, or they may have a larger shell that they're trying to shoot in a smaller area. So as a as the authority having jurisdiction, you want to know what the permits are, you want to know what the rules are, and you want to make sure that if you decide to make a decision and you're going to change something that you don't like, you want to make sure you're correct, because that's going to fall back on you. So if there is a failure and you've made a decision that was not based on fact or based on the laws, you're going to want to be careful about that. So you do want to brush up on your laws and understand the rules and regulations. And at minimum, if said different states or different rules, but 1123 really comes back. The 2010 edition's out of the NFPA 1123, and that's something you should brush up on. There's a lot of information in there. It's kind of hard to go through and decipher everything, but there's some minimum separation distances that are the most important that you should know, and that's the separation between the product and the audience. So those are some of the things. There's resources out there to use, but definitely want to make sure you are up to date on the laws and the rules before you speak to them.
Right, and the jurisdiction having authority is the person that can call the show, can say, hey, this isn't safe, this product falling into the audience, we've got some issues here, that this isn't safe, and that's where the signal comes in and say, call the show, stop, there's something not safe here. That's
correct.
The person that has that authority, and that's, in many cases, probably the fire department, and if not, we encourage people to check with their own states and their own local authorities to make sure they understand those rules and regulations. But the person having the authority is the one that ultimately is going to be responsible for saying, this isn't safe, and please stop. And that's
correct.
Why it's important to have those signals down. So,
correct. And that's another thing. I mean, when you come to the authority having jurisdictions, you have to remember is that sometimes as the authority having jurisdiction, you may be stuck in the unpopular position of having to call a show off. But you need to be correct in your information. You have to be willing to stick to your guns because, you know, the guy that calls off the 4th of July fireworks is usually, you know, there's going to be some anger or you're going to be down to City Hall explaining your action. So I encourage if there's something, if there's something that's unsafe or guys don't like a situation or weather or there's numerous different reasons to be calling a show. But you got to have the information. You got to be willing to call the show and you got to be willing to stick to your guns.
Right, right. And there are rules and regulations that govern that for every state, I imagine. So people need to be aware of what those rules are. But I think it comes back down to there's an awful lot of common sense that just has to go along with it, back to where we started originally about people realizing that these are explosives, that they need to. I think there was even a comment you made about time, distance, and shelter are friends of firefighters in these situations. And perhaps we can sort of wrap up with that kind of summary about where people need to keep their heads together and watch out for the stuff and just realize the danger of what we're involved with here.
Yep, I agree with that. The things that for the guys to take away from this out of anything they could have out of the program or out of this conversation is that guys, when you're going to a fireworks standby situation, or if you're going to be participating in that activity, guys need to have the minimums. You have to have protective clothing in place. Just because you're the fire department doesn't mean you're immune to anything. You should be wearing, head protection, eye protection, ear protection, turnout gear or forestry gear. You should have no exposed skin. You need to be doing that. You need to be looking at your distances and separating yourself. And protecting yourself. And it's, you think of it as a hazmat, and you're correct, with the time, distance, and shielding. It's kind of like, when you're dealing with time, distance, shielding, it's no different than dealing with a hazmat. It's you need to be in a safe place. You need to be further away than you normally think you should be. And that should take care of the issues. And like I say, if you go through the program or if you get a little bit off the websites and watch the videos, I think a lot of this will start to make sense to people and why we're preaching what we're preaching.
And I know from taking the class, firsthand what these things feel like. And perhaps you could tell us a little bit about your misfortune. So you know what you're talking about here.
Correct. I mean, it's not a proud moment, but actually I was involved with a display accident, and I was hit with a 5-inch shell that had come out of a dense pack trailer. We're doing everything right. It was a freak accident. So it proves that no matter, even for me to be out here preaching safety and everything, accidents happen. It was the product that had left the mortar, and somehow it had come out at an angle that it actually struck me in the chest. You know, we were in the middle of operating the display at the time and never saw it. And that shell hit me, pretty much took the wind out of me, took me off my feet. And then just to add a little bit of extra to it, the shell broke at my feet. So that meant we had stars everywhere. So that was a feet don't fail me now, get up and start running type situation. But you know, trying to make sure that we follow all the rules and do everything right. There's still products can fail, and I'm living proof of that. And that was definitely another one of the deciding factors on to start doing this program.
Absolutely. And speaking of the program, we should probably mention a few of the sponsors and the people that you've hooked up with to make this a reality up here in the Northeast. So perhaps
sure.
You can run down the credits, if you will.
Oh, sure. The credits at the number one was Atlas Advanced Pyrotechnics. Atlas is a display company from here in the Northeast, and they stepped up and they wanted to get on board with this program from the beginning. I had approached them and said, you know, hey, here's an idea of what we're looking at. And they were, you know, as with anybody and all the groups involved, everybody was a little apprehensive at first, going, you know, you want to teach people about fireworks and their failures. And, you know, everybody scratched their head and they're like, geez, you know, is that sending the wrong message to the community, or is that sending the wrong message to the fire departments? You know, we're trying to put on a display and you want us to go out there and intentionally make them fail. So, but Atlas actually, they jumped on board. And some great people over there. Steve Felke is the owner, and Matt Shea is the general manager, and they've been 100% supportive of us. And then, if it wasn't for their gracious donations, they're giving us product. We're running 4 to 5 classes a year now. They're giving us product. We're blowing up their racks, you know, so a lot of their equipment gets destroyed. And while we're doing this, and they're saying, hey, whatever it takes for safety, they've been on board with it. And then the New Hampshire State Fire Marshal's office has been extremely supportive. Fire Marshal Bill Degnan, I'd spoken to him a couple of years ago when we were thinking about designing this program, and he was on board immediately, and he gave me Fire Investigator Chris Wyman, who I kind of do the show together with. We do the class. Chris takes care of doing the laws, rules, regulations, inspections, and I take care of the display failure side of it. We work well together, and he's been on board since day one. So if the New Hampshire State Fire Marshal's been fantastic, and they saw what we were doing, and they've been supporting us all along. We hooked up with the New Hampshire Association of Fire Chiefs, which was it's been fantastic. The original when this program, when I first started, the first program we ran was here in Merrimack. I had 98 students the first time around, and I was trying to, you know, I was trying to be the cook, the bottle washer, and, you know, everything you want to call it there. So trying to register students, bring everybody on board, put together a curriculum to get instructors, everybody in here. It became overwhelming. And as luck would have it, Chief Sean Murray out of Hudson, who was also the vice president of the New Hampshire Association of Fire Chiefs, had said, hey, you know, we're looking to get involved with some training. And he said, we really like the training program that you're doing. We'd like to get on board with that, and we'd love to, you know, to help you out in any way you can, which is what I needed to hear, because it was I can't do all this all at the same time, trying to schedule everything, get everything done. So they kind of took over handling the money part and the registration part, which is fantastic. And what I'd like to put out there for credit to everybody is that this is done with all volunteers. The crew that I have in there, they don't receive any pay for this. The money that we charge for the class is a slight reimbursement that we filter some money back to Atlas to help cover the cost of insurance. But realistically, we're paying for you get your breakfast and lunch included for the price of the class. So by the time you get done with that, there's really not a lot of money to go around. So if it wasn't for my crew and the groups that we're working with, there's no way we'd be able to present this program.
Yes, and it's a very worthwhile program. And I thank you very much, Sean, for sharing this with us. And for trying to help us make firefighters realize the dangers that are involved with fireworks and trying to keep us all safe. It's a noble cause, and we really appreciate what you're doing and for the time you spent with us as well.
Well, I thank you, Ed. You and, Firehouse, I'm thrilled to death that you've come and been a part of the class and are willing to get that information out there. And that's all we want to do. If we prevent one firefighter injury or somebody thinks twice about what they're doing, and then we've accomplished what we're hoping to accomplish. So thank you very much to you and to your group.
Well, and thank you, Sean. And we encourage all the readers and listeners to check out the videos on this website and to listen to the podcast and read the stories and be safe. Thank you all for listening, and we'll sign off. Thank you, Sean.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio. Thank you.